There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
My debut book, Manifest, 7 Steps to Living Your Best Life, is out now, and you can order it from Amazon, Waterstones, or any other major bookshop. In this book, you will learn absolutely everything that you need to know about manifestation. You will understand that it really is a self-development practice to live by, to empower yourself, to step into your light, to become the best version of yourself that exists, and to attract anything you want into your life. I cannot wait for you all to read it. And if you love it, please don't forget to rate and review on Amazon, Audible, or wherever you purchased it from. Thank you so much and happy manifesting. Hello and welcome back to The Moments That Made Me with me, your host, Roxy Nafusi. I am so excited to finally announce that Vicky Patterson is on the show. Vicky is a TV personality who was crowned Queen of the Jungle in 2015. She's also a Sunday Times best-selling author and has no less than 5 million followers on Instagram, which is just mind-blowing. I went on her podcast a couple of weeks ago and I was just obsessed with her after talking to her. She has the most amazing energy. She is so kind, so open. And I know that this is just going to be such an amazing chat. So Vicky, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, Roxy, don't be daft. It's my absolute pleasure. That was such a lovely introduction. You're so kind. I feel the same way about you. You're such a special person.
Oh, thank you. And congratulations on your recent engagement. Were you shocked?
Yes, so shocked. Honestly, babe, we'd had a pretty terrible Valentine's. Honestly, it was just a shocker. Like, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong, and we ended up sitting in this, like, quite fancy restaurant for 3 hours without even getting anything to eat. And, oh, God, mate, by the end, I was like, should we just get a McDonald's and leave? So we did. And we then went to Dubai, like, 3 or 4 days later. So I wasn't so bothered about it. We kind of had a laugh about it in the end. But when we arrived at the restaurant, like, the place where he was going to propose, there was, like, rose petals and stuff everywhere. And he's so sneaky, kind of passed it off. He went, because we had a really bad Valentine's, I thought I'd do something a bit special. And I was just like eating it all up, like fully believing his lies. So just having a dead nice time and didn't expect anything at all. But obviously, it was a really lovely surprise.
Oh my gosh, I've literally got goosebumps. I feel like it's all the more special because it was a surprise as well. And what a great excuse that perfectly aligned.
I know. Yeah, everything was working his way that day, I think, definitely.
Oh, well, Vicky, on this podcast, we dive straight in to your first defining moment that got you to where you are today.
Oh my God. Such a good question. I feel like I am often, like, the first one that pops into my head is obviously my decision to do Geordie Shore. In terms of the path I'm on now, you know, and I'm often really tough on that chapter of my life. And, you know, I get quite a bit of stick from people saying like, oh, you forget where you came from and this, that and the other. And I think, listen, I've absolutely not forgotten where I come from. Like,
I'm very proud of what I've made of myself. And I'm so aware that without that chapter, I wouldn't be where I was now. I've just worked really hard to be better, you know, so I don't like to be constantly reminded of it as such, you know, the person I was when I was then. But I've got to call a spade, Roxy, and say, like, I definitely wouldn't be where I am now and doing everything I'm doing and, like, being as lucky as I am if I hadn't made that leap of faith, like, take that leap of faith and done Geordie Shore. So I think that was my first big moment, I suppose.
Oh, my God, of course. I mean, what was, like, how did Geordie Shore come about? And did you have any fucking idea how big it was going to become?
So, no, obviously we didn't. At the time, MTV, US, so MTV is like massive, obviously, isn't it? Something like 73 countries it's on in, and it's a global brand. And the MTV USA had just launched a massive flagship show called Jersey Shore, and it was being shown in every country, and everyone was lapping it up, and everyone was going mental. So, of course, the natural progression to that was to make a UK one. Which would be shown in 63 different countries. And, of course, we didn't know any of this. All I knew was that I liked watching TOWIE, but just started. I did like watching Jersey Shore, and I didn't like my job. That's all I knew, you know? and I was working in bars and nightclubs, and I thought to myself, like, I go out all the time anyway. What's... Like, is there so much of a big stretch or so much of a big leap to do this? And the producers, the casting directors, how they found people for it is, like, they just sent, like, young people out on the lash in Newcastle, producers and everything, and they would sit in nightclubs and bars and have a look for who they thought was, like, a bit of a big character, who they thought would make
No way!
Yeah, I swear. Don't get me wrong, there was, like, an application process and stuff via Facebook and things like that, and I know some of the cast did apply that way, but I was working as a hostess in a couple of clubs, actually. And I used to get the producers' tables and bottles, like cheap bottles of vodka, like nasty stuff, like pain stripper, but they used to love it. And we'd sit and chat, and I became almost like that unofficial tour guide to Newcastle, I suppose. And they'd say, like, oh, what's he like? Or what's she like? And I'd be like, he talks a good game, but he can't pull a muscle. Or like, she guns our, like, a granny on ice skates, she'll be great. Like, I made friends with them and became sort of like an invaluable, like, bit of pop, like, port of call. And they said a couple of times, like, do you want to do it? Do you want to be on? And I didn't know. I was slightly hesitant. But it was after one, like, massive night out where we all went out together, me, the producers, my mate. And I just thought I was having, like, a standard night, you know? Like, I used to be quite wild. Roxy, we've talked about this. I'm really boring now. But I used to be, like, you know, the type who was, like, wearing a pink cowboy hat in, like, a gay club till 5 o'clock in the morning, drinking shots, with, like, blowing the whistle. And that was the night out we had, you know, DJ box and running from doorman and crazy things. And they just looked at us by the end of the night. I think I had to carry the main producer home and put him in his, like, little hotel room and the jury's in. And he just said, he was like, honestly, Vicky, he was like, don't audition for the show. Don't screen test. Like, don't even meet MTV. He was like, just be on it. And I was like, right, okay, if you're serious and it's just me you want. He says, I said, I'll be on it. And, like, the rest is obviously history. So I feel like it was a really bumpy ride, mate. And I like, had some real ups and downs, but again, just wouldn't be where I was now without it. So I'll always be grateful, you know?
I'm always really fascinated by, you know, the story of people who suddenly become, you know, hugely recognized and what that does to you, like, mentally and emotionally, and how anybody copes with it. And if you don't mind me asking, how did you cope? Because, I mean, you're still, like, a young girl, like, living your life, like, growing up. How did you cope with the sudden enormity of the show and being recognized and having all this, these followers and people with opinions? And, like, how did you cope with it? And how did it feel like, oh, my God, this is incredible, like, wow? Or was there more to it than that?
So I think, like, if you look at shows like reality TV shows these days, like, let's look at the juggernaut that is Love Island, for example, you know, like, they go into that show, 19, 20, 21, whatever. Nobody knows who they are, virtually unknown. And they leave after 6 weeks in the sun with a million followers and brand deals, you know. It's a nice, it's a nice network. It's ITV. They're looking after the cast for the most of it, you know, for the majority of it. They're not there to bastardise anyone. It's feel-good vibes for the most part. And these kids come out to, like, enormous amounts of fame and notoriety. And that, I can't get my head around. That meteoric rise to fame, I can't get my head around. And I honestly take my hat off to a lot of them. And any of them, especially, who've managed to remain really grounded. You know, you meet some of them and you think, you're really lovely. Like, I was speaking to Teddy from Love Island the other day, and he's just such a nice man. And I was like, yes, you've got your head screwed on, son. But I feel like, had I experienced that at such a young age, everyone telling me I was so good looking and so funny and such an amazing TV star, I could have turned into a bit of an arsehole. Like, I feel like I had real potential to be an arsehole if that was me. But what we experienced was really, like, was slightly different. Like, nobody really liked us at first, Rocks. And if they did like it, it was because of our car crash. You know, it wasn't because, right, like, oh, my God, I really want to look like you when I grow up, or I really want my daughter to be like you. Like, God, there was none of that.
right.
We were controversial. And, like, if you were between a demographic of about 16 to 24, you knew who we were. Even then, like, I might not have been your cup of tea. Like, it was difficult. It was a hard slog to slowly get where we are. And I say we because I know, like, various other members of the cast are doing great things too and still working. So, yeah, so I feel like I didn't have that overnight success in a way that it kind of might have seemed to people, or the way that Love Island people get it and things like that. I felt like my big moment came in that sense when I was in the jungle, was in I'm a Celeb.
Yeah.
I feel like up until that point, it was hard. It was hard. There was a lot of misconceptions about me, a lot of preconceived notions that I was this yob, this, like, aggressive, kind of really opinionated, gobby monster that I sort of was being portrayed as. So I think I struggled with that perception, but it wasn't huge, you know? Like, I think I only experienced that when I did I'm a Celeb.
God, it's so interesting because I really had never thought about it like that. But yeah, I suppose it wasn't like this, like, and like, I mean this in, like, not in a rude way and at all, but it wasn't like this, like, huge unconditional adoration.
Oh my God,
you know, you guys really had, you were kind of up against it. You had the recognition, but not necessarily the, like, understanding of who you really were as people.
Yeah.
And so in a way that must have, you know, in fact, what that does for you in terms of, like, strengthening you and helping you to grow is actually kind of incredible. In some ways, better.
I mean, I always say it, like, that rock bottom will teach you things that mountaintops never will. And it is true. It is true. Like, you learn a lot about yourself when the chips are down, when things are hard, what you're made of, who your real friends are, like, what you're truly capable of. So I don't regret, like, sort of how I had to make it, you know, like, my start or whatever. And like I say, had I done Love Island or something, I might be a very different person to the person that's sitting chatting to you now, Rocks, you know? Like, I could be a real dick. and I kind of like who I'm becoming. So, no, I feel like I often worry about that real meteoric rise to fame and how it affects people. But I suppose you've just got to have a very nice support structure around you, haven't you? And you've got to hope for the best.
Totally. So then what was your second defining moment?
Oh, well, I've already mentioned it, haven't I? Bit of a spoiler. But I think going into I'm a Celeb, obviously, and subsequently winning it was a huge thing for me. Like, to go in, like, not many people will remember this or know this, but because it's so important to me, I always will. Everybody hated us when I went in, mate. Like, this is a show that's sort of, like, family-friendly. So people are so protective over it. It's like a British institution. It's ITV, it's prime time. You've got, like, 15 million people watching it. And you get legends in there. And, like, Andek host it, like, TV royalty. It's a big thing. And when they put me in, Twitter, which was the big social media medium at the time, was like, just blew up, get her out, we don't want her in, she's going to ruin it. Like, I don't know what they thought I was going to do, like down Jaeger bombs and punch a kangaroo or something. Like, just quite clearly they had me completely misconstrued. But I understand that they're protective, but they just had me all wrong. So yeah, nobody wanted us in. And obviously, I probably quite luckily didn't say all this, because you don't have your phone when you're in there, you're in a bubble. But within 24 hours of those people having those opinions and everybody wanting me out and nobody liking us, I was the favourite to win. And I stayed that way till I won it, with like a landslide, wow, of something like 80% of the votes. Maybe
wow.
Like, who gets the opportunity, mate, to change a nation's opinion? Like, nobody does, really. Like, overnight as well.
Smart. That's so fucking cool.
I felt like it was.
I'm so, like, how that must... I feel, firstly, just... I don't know. I feel like I have so much compassion for the you before you went in, and being, I don't know, like, even though you weren't maybe seeing it at the time, even the kind of fear of it before you go in, of what people might think and how they might react to you being in there. And I just feel so happy for you that you got to like show people who you really are. And that must have been incredible for your own, not that we validate ourselves based on the opinion of others, but it does make a difference. Like, if we feel accepted.
No, it makes a huge difference. And I know self-love, we should be really comfortable with who we are regardless and all the rest of it. But it is, it's just icing on the cake, isn't it? When other people tell you you're doing a good job as well. And to have been told for so many years that I was, you know, all the things people said on social media and all the things people said in the press, like, it wears you down. You almost start believing it's true, even if you know you're better. Like, you think, God, well, if all these hundreds of thousands of people think these things, then how, it has to be true, you know? So to go in there and have this opportunity to show the real me and change people's opinions will always be, like, a really pivotal moment for me, both in my professional career and my personal. It helped my relationship with my mum, you know, when I walked away from Geordie Shore and started doing more mainstream TV, like, we reconnected in a big way. I fell in love with myself a bit, you know, like, realised I was worth more. It was just big rocks, big on every level.
Oh, and what was the actual experience of being in there like?
It was so good. Like, I've spoken to some people who absolutely hated it. And I think, like, it all just depends on why you go in there and, like, your outlook. Like, I know you'll see, like, some old soap stars sitting on there and they just look fucking sick of their lives. And you think, you've got a tax bill coming, mate, haven't you? You know why they're there. They've been done. They've got, like, $250,000 or something that needs to be paid and they don't want to pay it. So they just do this show. And, like, honestly, I'm not judging at all. I feel like, fair enough, whatever, like your finances are your business, but you can see the people who don't want to be there, and you can see the people who think, I've watched this show since I was a kid, I've idolized Ant and Dec, I've seen this show turn people in, like, from zeros to heroes, and I am excited to be here. And that's what I was excited to be there. I was just a fan. I felt like I'd won a competition. Honestly, I did. And like, that's what shone through, I think. Like, I just was up for anything, game as a badger, and really keen to change people's misconceptions about us. I wanted to show the real me, so every second I was just buzzing. And, like, you know, there was no trial too gross, no critter too, like, disgusting. I was just up
for it.
Oh,
my God, I just cannot imagine.
Oh, honestly, do you know what, mate? Like, it was the best 3 weeks of my life. And for a long while, I struggled with that feeling, with knowing, like, God, professionally, like, this might be really difficult for us to top.
Really?
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Like, when you have that feeling, like, like, how many, 15 million people lasts? Like, how many times do you get in front of that audience very often? It's not a lot.
Yeah.
And I've certainly not done it since. So, no, it was difficult for me to accept, kind of like, oh, you might have peaked there, Pat. But it will always be like one of the best moments of my life and defining for so many ways.
Oh, beautiful.
Push Your Peak is a brand new podcast brought to you by Wattbike. Join me, Louise Minchin, and some of the world's most incredible sports people to learn what it takes mentally and physically to push yourself beyond your limits. Whether you're an elite or everyday athlete, it can be hard to continually progress. How do you push yourself out of your comfort zone? Where do you go to find that inner drive? Tune in to hear these inspiring stories and take away the belief that you can achieve your own goals no matter how big or small. You can find us wherever you got this podcast. Just search Push Your Peak.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound. And you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
So then, what was your third defining moment?
Ooh, I probably have to say, and this might sound quite sad, and it's not meant to. I was meant to get married a couple of years ago. I was in a serious relationship, a long-term relationship with a fella I'd known for about 10 years, maybe even longer. And we'd like reconnected and been together, bought a house, got engaged, and we were like 6 months off getting married. The relationship fell apart, but in quite a public and humiliating way. He cheated on us in Dubai, of all places. And the girl had woke up and sold our story before he'd even got up. Oh, and like even as I say it now, it just sounds so sordid and gross. But like, you know, I was on the wrong path, Rox. Like I really was. I was like forging forward with a relationship that I knew was really unhealthy and wrong, but like I was just so desperate not to fail it again. Like I can talk for hours about my professional life and feel really quite proud of myself for the things I've managed to achieve and the person I'm becoming. But personally, until very recently, like I didn't have a lot to write home about. I really struggled, man. And I felt like I didn't want to be a failure in that department again. You know, I didn't want to be splashed across the front of the magazines like she's drove another man away. And it felt like it was always my fault. Felt like she was the reasons the press always gave for why my relationships broke up was always she's too focused on her career, or she hasn't got time for it right now, or he wants a family and she doesn't, like all these things. And it was almost like the blame was on me, like I was fundamentally unlovable. And I know I felt like I wasn't strong enough to do it again because I was fighting so hard to make that relationship work. I had no energy for anything else. And the thought of like going through all that was too much. So I just kept going with a relationship that God, would have only ended in divorce and heartbreak and everything because we weren't right for each other. So it took that moment, you know, like feeling like I'd been humiliated and all the rest of it, to walk away. And my decision to do so was instantaneous. Like, there was never, there was never, should we meet and have crisis talks? Like, should we get together? Like, do you want to do a public apology? Like, do you want to explain to me? It was, I've heard what you've done. I've got, like, I've seen the pictures. I've got no desire to hear anything else. Which sounds really, like, cutthroat and callous, but, like, I've always said, I will accept a lot in terms of, like, in love. Like, I think people fall out of love. I think people grow apart. I think all these things are unfortunately part of the journey, but I will never, ever be disrespected. Rocks, I give so much to me friendships, to me relationships, to everything. I'm like a good friend and a good girlfriend, and that I just can't forgive. I can't forgive being cheated on. So I walked away, and like the next day after I found out, I was on This Morning posting like a segment about the jungle. And all anyone wanted to know is if I had my ring on or not. And of course I didn't. It was long gone. And like, it sounds daft that this is defining for me, but it was the hardest fucking 3 months of my life to put myself back together after that. To be this poster girl for heartbreak and just desperately being trying to change that narrative. Yeah. To show lasses that, like, because, you know, I could have stayed and it would have been easier. Because loads of women have done it before and I don't judge them at all. If it was right for them, there's different circumstances and everything. But I realised that all I was teaching young lasses who followed me, young women, older women, women of any age, is that being disrespected is okay, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, it made me realise what I deserved, what I was made of, and that actually, like, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
I find that honestly so, so inspiring, because I think that there is no worse feeling than heartbreak. I mean, it is a form of grief. It is so that, you just that pit in your stomach, the like feeling that like, it's like a physical feeling as well as mental. It's
visceral, it's Roxy. It's absolutely visceral.
Exactly. That's exactly the right word for it. But it does give you this like really unique opportunity for rebirth that I don't think you get in many other circumstances, where you actually through that pain, you do reinvent yourself.
You see, like, it's really interesting to hear you talk about it like that. Because obviously I never saw it that way. I just thought, like, you're going to have to get through this because there are so many people watching you. And that's what I believed. I was like, and you're telling them all, like all these young lasses, that you're giving them hope. You know, if they've not got a nice boyfriend at home, if someone treats them badly, you're telling them there's life after that man. So fucking you best keep your head held high. And that was all I thought I was doing. But like, the further along the line I got with it, I realised I was changed. I realised I was forever different. And like, I am still a hopeless romantic. Like, God, I've met and fell in love with Erkan something like 4 months after everything that had happened. And I mean, when I say I fell in love with him on the first date, Rocks, I was like texting me mates to buy a hat and that. I was like, girls, don't return your wedding outfits. I've met the one. But like, I don't know. Like, I felt different. Like, I knew what I was willing to accept and I knew what I wasn't.
Yeah.
And I knew who I wanted to be and who I didn't. Like, now mine and Erkan's communication is so much better than I've had with any other, like, previous relationship. And that's not because he's different, he's great, he's brilliant, but, like, he's still a fella. So he's still a fella, and it's because I'm pushing it to be different as well. So, mate, that's really interesting to hear you say that. I've definitely come out of it stronger and changed, all for the better.
Oh, I love that. And if anybody is listening and who is going through heartbreak now, what are some things that you did that kind of just helped you get through those stages?
Oh, okay. So obviously I feel like it's incredibly subjective, and I actually talk about this in my book. I say I get really agitated where people kind of hold you to some sort of like
like imaginary timeline. Like I remember when I met Erkan and everyone was like, oh God, it's far too soon. You've not grieved for the last one. It's a rebound. It'll never last. And you know, if I'd let all of those people get into my head, I could potentially have lost Erkan. I could not have my happily ever after now. And like, I know it was really well-meaning, but actually like it's such bullshit. Like you are allowed to like fall in love or meet someone new whenever you feel ready. And for some people that might be 6 years after it. And for some people it might be 6 months. And for some people it might be 6 weeks. Like you know yourself and you know when you're ready. So like, don't listen to anybody else. Feel your feels and do what feels instinctively right. I think that's probably like the best advice on that. And then also like, I think, and I don't know how healthy this is, but I felt like I really faked it till I made it. You know that saying, like fake it till you make. Like,
yeah.
I was sad, so sad. And there were days when I completely gave in to me sadness and lay on the sofa with my mum and just held her hand and like watched things and cried and said like, why was it me and all the rest of it, and did those really self-indulgent things, because that's an important part of the process. But like, but then there were also days where I just fucking put my lipstick on and went on the telly, because you know, like getting up and faking it and smiling and projecting this image of strength, like there's only so long you can go on doing it until it becomes real. And it actually just becomes you, and you become stronger and hardened. And I don't by any means mean cold. Like, I don't, I'm so emotional. I'm never going to be that person who's like, oh, water off a duck's back. Like, no, I'm a fanny. So I just mean like if you can, like just keep going and try and act happy and strong and all the rest of it. And eventually it will just come, you know, and one day that smile will be real and it'll happen so organically. You'll think, shit, I'm fine. And you'll be really proud of yourself.
Oh, that is such beautiful advice, Vicky. Thank you. And how are you now? How is everything now? What's going on? What's coming up? Tell us where you're at.
Okay, so I am good, Roxy. I'm off the back of, God, as you will attest, like promoting a book is no mean feat. Writing a book, like I thought was difficult, but actually the promoting it, the stress and the pressure of seeing how people are going to like respond to it and all the rest of it, like it feels like that has added like 10 years to my life. So I'm kind of just trying to like de-stress and unwind after that. But yeah, the book's out, the book's done well. And at the same
time... But
it's
done like remarkably well. Congratulations.
And you know what? I've been dying to say the same thing to you, lass. Like, well done, mate. I keep reading all your stuff on Instagram, like Vogue India and... these amazing events, and I just think there's nobody deserves it more. And you know, honestly, I was like, probably, I was absolutely crackers. I was shouting about your book so much after I got off the podcast to you as well. And I was thinking, and I told you this, I was thinking, I should really fucking be telling people to buy mine. But honestly, all my mates have bought it. My mum's got the copy you gave me. My makeup artist's balls deep in it, Roxy. Like, people are telling me it's changed their lives, lass. So you should, I know you know so this, much. But you're amazing. You're helping
thank
people.
You so much. Thank
you're welcome.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. So yeah, so the book is done, and around the same time as I was promoting that, I was filming a documentary for Channel 4, which I've just finished filming, and I've actually found super difficult. It's called Vicky Patterson, my dad, alcohol, and me. I've always had a really complicated relationship with alcohol, and I have quite an addictive personality in general, and it might or might not surprise you to know that like my dad is an alcoholic, and subsequently like I've throughout my life, you know, had periods where I just thought, well, there's just only one way my life is going to go. Like, I will be alcohol dependent, same as my dad eventually. I believe there was like a huge genetic element. Everyone has told me for years, you know, you're your dad's daughter and stuff like that. We're very similar. Brain works in similar ways. And I just kind of felt like it was an inevitability.
And then there was those periods in my life where I felt like I had it better in control. And I don't know, I've just struggled. So my whole life, it's kind of been a bit of a shadow hanging over us. And I finally got the opportunity, like, because I'm in such a healthy and happy place, but like, you know, lover, can, great relationship with my family and friends, nice dog, nice house, happy bear. I kind of felt like it was the right time to unpack that. And, you know, even though I am strong and all the rest of it, like, there's just never a right time to unpack like trauma like that. It's always going to hurt, isn't it? And it's always going to take a bit from you and feel draining. So yeah, mate, I've had a really emotional start of the year, and I think that's why, like, Dubai had come at just such the right time. I was like, fuck me, get me some sun and some cosmos and just let me chill out a bit.
Of course. And when does the documentary come out?
So there's no release date as of yet. It's in the very capable hands of the production company and Channel 4, and they're making it look all fancy and sleek and stuff, and hopefully removing some of my snot, because it was a lot of tears. But no, I'm really proud of it.
It must have been a very therapeutic experience.
Oh, 110%, mate. Yeah, like, really, really cathartic. But draining, you know, like, sure, like, you get this, like, when you go, like, I looked at that beautiful event you put on and I thought, that looks stunning. And as just like an outsider looking in, I think, God, I bet that was amazing. I bet you she was on a high. But then I thought, I bet you crashed. I bet, like, afterwards, after giving so much of yourself. And if you are a perfectionist, if you want to do something well, if you're creative and invested, like I was with this project, like you are, then you only give 110, you know? So honestly, it was amazing moments of like adrenaline and high and catharticism and all that, followed just by just being so drained and so emotionally exhausted. So it's been a roller coaster. I know that term gets thrown around an awful lot and it's a bit cheesy, but it's definitely the only way to describe what I've been through. And I just hope it helps people, mate. People going through the same thing as me. Yeah.
Absolutely will. And you just need some rest, TLC, downtime now.
That's it. Loads of good books, mate. Loads of peppermint tea. Oh, so snuggling. Yeah, I'm really excited.
Exactly. So just before you go, I've got some really quick fire questions for you.
Okay, hit me.
The first one is, what is your most memorable book?
Shall I say yours? Shall I say mine?
Go on then.
I mean, I feel like we can get some great promo in here, and I hate to miss an opportunity. I've actually wrote 6 books, mate. Would you believe?
I know. 6.
No, I know. Honestly, with a real range of success, so don't quite pat me on the back just yet. But yeah, I had an autobiography. Which became a Sunday Times number one bestseller. 6 weeks or something, actually, the autobiography. People were very nosy on that one.
Wow.
I know. And then a couple others in the middle. I really want to be a writer. I just couldn't quite find my niche. So there was some fiction, some non-fiction. And then, of course, the space where I found myself in most recently with The Secret to Happy. And I think that's probably, even though it didn't rival the success of my autobiography, like, it's the one that... one that made me dead happy, you know, and the one that I felt impacted people's lives the most. So, I think shamelessly, I've talked about my own books and I'm going to say that one. But I mean, I love so many other books. I'm a huge nerd, a huge bookworm, everything from like To Kill a Mockingbird to like Sarah Knight and Vex King. So, I can't praise the written word enough.
Your favourite quote?
I like a lot of them, but I think my favourite one is, don't let your ice cream melt while counting someone else's sprinkles.
Oh, I love that. I haven't heard that one before.
I feel like it's really cute. It conjures up a really nice image of eating an ice cream on a sunny day and 2 kids, and one's like staring at the others to kind of be like, did you get a bigger cone than me? Like, did you? And you know, by the time you finish, like, comparison is the thief of joy. And if you let it, it will take it will rob you of so many beautiful moments in your life. Mm. So, focus on yourself, your ice cream cone and your sprinkles, and don't fucking worry about what anyone else is doing.
Your go-to feel-good film?
I love movies. Okay, so I love shite. I love shite films. And I really feel like things that make me happy are things like Runaway Bride.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, do you remember Legally Blonde, Pretty Woman.
Great film.
Anything with Jennifer Aniston in, like, oh, God, and especially if it went straight to Netflix, I'm all over it. So, yeah, right.
The breakup with Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston really makes me lol.
Like, oh, iconic, mate. No, I love all stuff like that. Probably they're not going to win any awards anytime soon, but they're my faves.
A moment where you felt most proud?
Winning the jungle, for all the reasons I said before.
I mean, I can't even imagine that feeling when you hear your name. I must be like, holy shit.
And, oh, it was a big one.
A song that cheers you up.
Anything by Little Mix, in particular, like Power, Salute, stuff like that. I feel like they are some very feisty females who know just how to get me fired up.
Oh, I love that. Top tip for dealing with stress.
Look at me right now. Remove yourself from social media, like a digital detox. I know everybody's lives are different and stresses are subjective, but for me, so much of mine is intrinsically linked to that, to my phone, you know? And I feel like by deleting those apps, removing myself from that platform, I feel like I've already found peace. So I 110% advocate for a digital detox every so often. You have more time, you get a bit more clarity, you focus on the things and the people that matter, and yeah, you stop counting other people's fucking sprinkles.
I love that. I'm genuinely like inspired by it. I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to do that. And the last question is, who is the first person you call to share good news?
I feel like I call Erkan. I do. I call Erkan. And if he doesn't answer, I call my mom. Like, they're both my favorites. I'm very lucky to have a lovely mom and a lovely partner. So those are mine.
Oh, I love that. Well, Vicky, thank you so much for coming on the show and for being so open and warm. And I just love talking to you. Every time I just feel so full. So thank you so, so much.
Well, the feeling's reciprocated, Roxy. Thank you so much. And like, honestly, just keep smashing it, mate. I don't want to sound patronising at all, but like, I'm just so proud of everything you're doing. It's really inspirational. So thank you for having us, mate.
I hope you have a great day. Thank you, lovely.